Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Helen.
And I'm Sarah.
And this is the Squiggly Careers Podcast, a weekly show where we talk about the ins, outs, ups and downs of work and give you some support, some ideas and just maybe a bit of empathy to help you succeed in your squiggly career. And if it is the first time that you have listened, you have quite a few episodes to go. But actually, if you're a bit worried and you don't know where to start, head to our website, which is amazingif.com. You can search for the topic that matters to you most right now in a search bar and it will come up with all the episodes and things that we have done, which will help you. And each of our episodes as well comes with a bit of extra support. So we've got pod sheets. So that's a one page downloadable template, which has got questions and all the ideas for actions that we share. And there's also Pod Plus, which is a weekly conversation with either Sarah or myself. It's free. It's every Thursday. There is a lovely community there on Zoom that you can learn with too. And we just dive a bit deeper into in the topic we talk about. So you can learn from some other people and you can put the ideas into action that little bit more easily. So that is all there for you. You'll see the links for that in the show notes. And if you ever can't find anything, just email us. We're Helen and Sarah at squigglycareers.com.
So today we're talking about how silos stop you in your job and hold you back in your career. And this week's topic links really nicely to a new Harvard Business Review article that we've just got out, if you want to take a read, which is about some experiments that we've been doing with 15 organisations and more than 7,000 employees, all about career progression, or as we like to call it, squiggle and stay. And so in the article, which is a bit different to some of the ones that we've done before, we describe some of those experiments, whether they worked or not. Every good experiment, some of them work better than others. Employees' experience of those experiments and how you as a leader or an organisation could set those up if there's something that you're interested in. So we'll link to that from the podcast today and have a quick read, and we'd love to know your feedback. And if you'd like to find out more about those experiments or if we can help support your organisation with something similar, you can get in touch with us on the email that Helen mentioned before.
So back to today's topic then, all about silos. Sarah and I had a bit of an interesting experience in prepping for this podcast. So what we tend to do is we like decide a topic in advance, which normally happens over WhatsApp, many messages. And then we both go off and research it and we put all of our ideas into a Word document and then like basically create a bit of a structure for this conversation. And what Sarah and I realised when we were looking at the Word document is that we'd both come at silos from a slightly different perspective because of our own experience. So we thought we'd share just a little bit about our experience of silos so you can maybe think about, you know, what does this look like for you? So my experience of silos and how I think they have got in the way of my development has been when I have worked probably largely in big organisations and I have been in one particular function and I have wanted to do something else. So as an example, I've been working in sales and I've wanted to make a move into marketing, but there has been sort of like something within the organisation that has made that really hard for it to happen. Like people don't normally make that move, or we don't know how to do that with you, or actually it's just easier for you to stay in this function. So maybe like a manager's not really made it very easy, but it's been seen as sort of like an unusual move to make. And therefore I've felt that I've had to work very, very hard to make it happen. And without that effort and that energy, I would probably be stuck in my silo. So kind of my experience has, I guess, been quite structural, like an organisation has not supported me to sort of move across an organisation and do lots of different things. It's I have felt stuck because of that siloed structure. And the risk for me has been that that would impact my career development, like my skills wouldn't be developed in different areas. I might have felt like my relationships were quite constrained to the career that I was currently in rather than being built beyond it. And actually, I just think my enjoyment of my work would start to suffer because I just feel a bit frustrated that this was what I had to do if I was going to work here. So that's been my experience of how silos have affected me. Sarah, what's your perspective?
Whereas I think I've seen silos more in terms of departments and teams, you know, where people sort of get a bit territorial about their team, their perspective is the right perspective. Or I think just sometimes everybody gets very heads down and you're all working really hard and it's not always intentional, but you end up stuck in silos. You feel like even though you're very interdependent and reliant on other people to get stuff done, everyone's sort of working individually. And then it can end up feeling like you're sort of working against each other, which is never a good thing, or that maybe you don't have those common interests and goals that help you to move forward. And so it sort of feels like everyone's, you know, I always think of it in like lines, you know, like vertically versus horizontally. Yeah. And I always think, when I think of silos, I just see all these like vertical lines of everyone trying to move forward with the things that are important to them. But then that can often be counter to or contradict the team that could even just be sitting next to you. And in big organisations, I guess the risk of this is perhaps higher just because, you know, you've got people in different places, people working in different time zones. But I do actually even see it in Amazing If. You know, we're a much, much smaller organisation than the big ones that Helen and I spent most of our career working for. And I still see those silos in Amazing If. In some of the different departments and the different work that we do, sometimes those departments don't talk to each other or don't collaborate or communicate. And again, I never think that is from a desire to sort of be protectionist or to keep things to yourself. I think it just ends up being a kind of nature of, wow, we've got lots to do. People are busy, people are heads down. And then you sort of forget to look across. You know, maybe you look up. People in the Amazing If team might think, well, I need to talk to Helen, but they perhaps don't think, oh, but I need to talk to someone in a different team. So a slightly different perspective on silos, I think.
So we came to the conclusion from these different perspectives that silos can hold you back in your job, which I think is what Sarah has talked about.
So many ways that silos get in your way.
We were like, oh my gosh, this silo thing's massive. But yeah, they can hold you back in your job because they stop you kind of being effective in the ways that Sarah talked about. But they can also, I guess from my frame, they can hold you back in your career because you might feel more kind of stuck in a particular position rather than feeling like you've got lots of opportunities for your progression. So we did feel that even though we came at things from different places, what it basically made us think was that silos are really, really significant. And what we need to do is find ways to sort of grow beyond silos, whether that's affecting your job today or sort of contributing to your career in the future.
And I think what might be a useful place to start for everybody listening is to figure out which are your most significant silos at the moment. So is it actually you need to go beyond your silos just to be even better at your day job? Or is it that, as Helen described, actually you're really curious about maybe transferring your talents or doing something different? And so actually going beyond your silo looks like actually a move that you might want to make in your career. So perhaps just be thinking, okay, well, which of these is getting in my way? And again, don't be too hard on yourself because you're probably getting in your own way as well as other people or systems or structures might be getting in your way too. I think we've probably all been guilty at times of staying stuck in our silos because also it's often what we know, what feels
it's
most
easier,
comfortable.
Right? It's comfortable. It's
easier.
Easy.
Like you say, you make progress. You know, it's a bit like, oh, if I can just ignore everyone else, I can just get on and do it.
Well, and maybe you also get a bit victim-y as well. Like,
a bit blamey.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, it's just how it is around here. And I'm like, rather than going, okay, I can see a silo, I can see how this is affecting how people are working. So what can I do? Like, and I think that's what we are going to try. We've got three what can I do actions for you to maybe have a bit of an experiment with if a silo feels like it might be getting in your way at the moment.
So our first how is to channel your inner anthropologist. Helen and I have got very excited about researching anthropologists for this podcast. We've both decided we'd quite like to be one, so that would be us doing a bit of a squiggle.
Like a different course and compare answers. I quite like that.
Well, you can talk a bit about the book you've been reading in a second, but the thing about an anthropologist is they study culture and characteristics. And so the idea here is if you sort of bring an anthropologist mindset to your organisation, it will help you to escape your silo. And so we were thinking about, well, what are some of the questions that you would almost be curious about? What would you be researching as an anthropologist if you were thinking about your company? And you'll be able to come up with more, I'm sure, but here are three just to get you started. So one, how would you describe to somebody who doesn't know, how does your company make money? Well, I think that's such a fascinating question. And I think loads of people would struggle to describe that in a simple and straightforward
or even
way.
How much money does your company make? I think I probably wouldn't know that in lots of companies.
Yeah. So there is something almost about like the dynamics of your company. And what, you know, you might be a not-for-profit, you might be a charity, but still sort of just understanding like almost like how does your company function? Like how does it sort of succeed? I think is really interesting. Then we thought there might be something about where does the power and influence exist in your organization? So an anthropologist both would sort of observe that, they would sort of see that in action, and they would sort of notice, you know, like who are the decision makers, who seems to have undue influence, perhaps even though maybe their title or their level might not necessarily give you that indicator of kind of the influence that they have. So I was like, I think that would be
fascinating. And what our team would say about us, they'd be like, Helen thinks she makes decisions, but actually Sarah is a decision maker in this business.
Oh yeah, I don't know if I want to.
I don't want to know it either. I don't want to know. Let's leave it.
They'd probably just tell me some of the things I know about myself that are definitely true. And then the last one, we were trying to get to a question a bit more about culture. So what are some of the common company characteristics that everybody in a company would recognise? You know, the sort of what makes your company, especially if you've got actually probably any size organisation. But, you know, if you went and asked people like, oh, in one word, how would you describe what it's like to work around here? Or if you were going to describe in a sentence what it's like to be in this company, you know, almost like what are those common things that would just keep coming up? I remember one leader who Helen and I were talking to. Actually, we were interviewing for an event that we did. They were describing their organisation. I remember saying to them, oh, it sounds quite relentless. You know, it was a bit of a provocation. And he said, oh, that's interesting. That's the number one word people use to describe what it's like to work here. And I remember thinking, that was me being an anthropologist just for sort of 10 minutes, was like listening to him answer lots of questions and kind of observing and slightly second guessing and just sort of going, oh, does that kind of feel fair as a cultural characteristic? And it clearly did, because he identified that and he was like, yeah, I think that is fair.
Or getting, I think Sarah's referencing this, the book that I've read, which is called The Silo Effect by Gillian Tett. And I think one of the things that she talks about, some of the anthropologists, there's lots of different contexts for it in the book, but they kind of go around and observe people living their day-to-day life. And I think what you could do is kind of ask people to tell a story about a significant moment in a company and just sort of listen and learn from the stories that they tell. And I was just thinking about Lucy in our company, Sarah, when she said about in Amazing If, one of the things she's noticed, so Lucy's worked in a very large organisation and now she works for us, and she said that one of the things she's noticed in Amazing If is that when we say, if you just like, we'll talk about something, so a piece of work that might need doing, and Sarah or me will be like, oh, no rush, don't worry, like by the end of tomorrow is fine. She said, like in another company, a bigger company, if you say no rush, don't worry, that means something like by the end of next week is okay. But in Amazing If time, no rush, don't worry is basically there's 24 hours for something. Yeah. And that's kind of interesting.
It means it doesn't have to be done today. Yeah.
It's not like now. It's like you've got at least 24 hours. But that's interesting because, you know, part of the way that people would experience our organisation is that we are pretty pacey in terms of how we work. So sometimes I think getting people, what might it sound like? What things might you hear working in this company? Those sort of statements or stories can be really interesting to surface when you're being your kind of inner anthropologist.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage.
Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So idea for action number two is all about building bridges. So when you're stuck in a silo, you might find yourself very limited to your function, and therefore the projects that you work on, the people that you work with are very connected to your role today and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. Building bridges means looking for an adjacent function. So this isn't sort of randomly going to someone in the organisation, though that can be interesting too, but this is a little bit more connected. So what's an adjacent function to yours? So for example, if you are in marketing, I would suggest that an adjacent function was sales. If you're in finance, an adjacent function might be procurement. If you're in operations, it might be strategy, and so on. It will depend a little bit on the structure of your company, but you're looking for one that is kind of connected, not too far away, but maybe one that you don't work with really closely all the time. And what you're going to do here, if you're building bridges, is proactively look for opportunities to get involved in meetings. Maybe you're going to spot shared problems. Maybe there's an event or a moment in time where you could more easily come together, and you are looking to learn. What are they working on? How are they doing it? You're looking to build relationships. So, you know, who could I work on that project with in that function? I could build a strong relationship with, because we're both working on that project together. You're also really looking to stretch your strengths. So you're using your strengths maybe on a slightly different project or with slightly different people. And this kind of adjacent way of working will help you to sort of get through the silo, but and it might take time. Like, this is not going to lead to you suddenly having broken that silo tomorrow. It does take time for you to build those relationships, for you to kind of make progress on that project, for you to stretch your strengths. But proactively looking for those adjacent opportunities will make that much easier. And just as a way of like bringing this to life, there's an article that I read more about leadership, and we'll link to this in the pod sheet in case you want to read it. It's a Harvard Business Review article about how to lead across a siloed organization. And one of the things that stuck with me from the article, they talked about making purple. And so they said, like, you know, some people work red and some people work blue, but actually people who work effectively across a siloed organization, they make purple. They basically mix the red and the blue and they make purple. And you're kind of trying to be a purple person. You're the person that brings these two areas together, and you know, something different exists because of it. So be a purple person is what we're trying to look for here.
Yeah, and I guess I can think of examples of people I've worked with who are very good at this, who are sort of naturally purple people, and they are good at making the whole bigger than the sum of the parts. I think that's the outcome, and that's also why organizations are so obsessed with wanting to break down silos. So they're sort of often naturally structured to create silos, and then they sort of have to break them back down. And it's why, you know, some organizations are more matrix based now. There's lots of cross-functional project teams and all those kind of things, because I think organizations recognize that sometimes they're not always set up to help people to work in this way. But I think from watching people who are very, very good at this, who are real experts at this, they always prioritize sort of spending time understanding. I feel that they get that sort of like, this is not about me. Building bridges is not about me. It's about understanding your perspective, your challenges, what's on your mind at the moment. And so actually they could articulate really clearly in an adjacent function, well, what are the goals of that area? What are their sort of knotty problems or what's not working at the moment? And I think I've definitely been guilty of this sometimes in the past, is if you don't understand that, then sometimes you miss why something that you're working on isn't sticking. And so perhaps perhaps all you receive from another team is a sort of either they're really slow, or you just sense a lack of interest,
like
or frustration, or just a no, or they sort of get to it at some point and you're there thinking, oh, but this is really important. And I think people who are great at building bridges go, yeah, this is really important to us, but actually this might be really unimportant to this other team, or it's really, really far down their list. And do you know what? They're actually dealing with three other things at the moment, which was going to make it really hard to make something happen. And so I think you don't always have to be like in team meetings or really involved in projects with other teams. I actually just think if you can create some of those relationships, even, you know, be strategic about, you know, who you're being mentored by. You know, I think having lots of mentors, we've always talked about, is a good thing and make it really informal. I remember having a few mentors at Sainsbury's who were just in very different areas to me. And actually that helped me to escape my silo.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about, oh, what's going on in the world of their technology teams. Because of course, when you meet, you're like, oh, what's happening in your world at the moment? And they like describe stuff and you think, oh, I mean, that sounds stressful, usually, if you're talking to technology teams. Or they'll be talking about some stuff around finance and, I don't know, they've got to talk about some cost budgeting things that you think, oh, okay, well, that sounds really significant and quite hard to do. And then you realise 2 days later you're asking them for some numbers for something you're working on. And no wonder it's going to be tricky to get those things this week, because actually they've got a different priority. And sometimes those things are just not that transparent. It all feels quite opaque until you start kind of talking to people. And then it just gives you that sense of, you know, almost like the fuller picture, or like the bigger picture, I guess, as it's often described, rather than just like you're part of a picture.
I think my... just very personally, the things that really helped me build bridges were working on cross-functional projects. So I would always put my hand up for a cross-functional project.
Yeah.
And then the second thing, which is probably much more me than Sarah, I would get involved in company events. I often found like company events, you know, like you're sort of representing your function. So in one space, you're kind of, I'm representing my silo. But yeah, because those company events brought everyone together, it gave me an opportunity to build those relationships. I always tried to spot those opportunities.
Yeah, and I think I probably did it. Definitely mentoring really helped me. I naturally ended up working on quite a lot of cross-functional things, almost like not through intention. It was just like they were the jobs that I had, so that was definitely useful. And actually just spotting opportunities to, I think, spend time with different teams. I think because I was always, and I'm always, curious. So I was just like, oh, I wonder how that works. Or I wonder what's happening in that team. And then you sort of start to realise, actually, the more you understand, I think the more effective you can be. But I was also, at times, somebody who, like I said, would have fallen into the trap of being so determined to get something done and naturally being a bit stubborn. I think sometimes that means if you have those traits, then you do stay in your silo, because you're like, right, I'm going to, you know, I want to achieve this thing. And sometimes spending time outside of your silo in the short term slows you down. I think it is a slowing down to speed you up thing. Mm-hmm. So it can feel frustrating for me, because I'm like, oh, I want to achieve stuff and I want to make these things happen. But then you realize you're like, yeah, but you're going to get to roadblocks anyway if you don't end up doing this stuff. And then our final idea is to find space away from your silo. So we were both sort of reminiscing about how sometimes silos can be very hard to find your way out of, and they can feel restricting and frustrating. And maybe some of the things that we've described so far, you might kind of go, well, I've tried that. And it, like, I can't get involved in those cross-functional projects.
I just need to leave. I think that's probably where I've got. Yeah. The only way I'm going to, like, get through this is to leave and work in an organisation that's different.
Yeah, or perhaps you're just getting a bit, you know, thing where things feel samey and stuck, yeah, or stalling. It's all of those kind of words, I think, where sometimes silos just feel really hard to find your way out of. And we were both reflecting that when you find space away from your silo, so almost rather than trying to fight the silo or fight the system in this example, you're kind of going, okay, we'll go somewhere else. We'll leave that to one side for now. Doesn't mean that we might not have to come back to it at some point. But where have you got space to create, to play, to do something different, where you're basically going to be free from that frustration and those kind of restrictions? And actually, we talked about when we first started Amazing If, that's exactly what this was. It was a lot of space away from our silo. It was outside of our big organisations. It was outside of marketing that we were both working in. It was outside of the industries. So it really was like really quite far away. And we could just make it up as we went along. And actually then what happens is then you meet people that you wouldn't meet otherwise. You work in a way that you don't normally work. And you start to almost create a sort of status and develop skills that are beyond where you are with your day job and that you could probably get with your day job. The thing that we also both realised is we hadn't been particularly intentional about going, oh, we want to escape a silo. It was probably just more a response to how we were both feeling. And then we're natural creators. So we went away and kind of created some stuff.
I think that skills and status outside of your silo is a really, really key point here. Like, again, you might not be doing intentionally. You're just trying to sort of follow some people that you'd like to spend more time with or a passion that gives you energy. But the outcome is new relationships, better developed skills, and maybe a different way that you can talk to people about what you're doing with your development. And I think those are the things that unlock opportunities. So back to Sarah's point, like this will take time. This will take time for you to, you know, get involved in those things. But the outcome is that you will unlock different opportunities and you'll probably have a lot more energy for them. Because at the moment, if all of your energy is kind of going into feeling frustrated and fighting a silo, then that's not actually that helpful. And you're probably not feeling particularly positive, but sort of channeling it into something that you enjoy and people that you enjoy spending time with, which was definitely, back to reminiscing, it was definitely how I felt doing Amazing If. Suddenly, I kind of bring that back to work. Like I'm excited and I'm positive and I've got new ideas and I've got some new experiences, and all that kind of starts to build your identity in a different way. You're more than just the person who, you know, my sort of point of doing that was working in marketing. I'm much more than that now because I've got this other identity and these other relationships and this other set of experiences that I couldn't have built in my day job. I think that's what these opportunities help you to do. Now, obviously, Sarah and I started a side project. You don't have to do that. Like it could be volunteering, it could be a community, an internal community or an external community that you decide to kind of be active in. But it's those sort of other experiences that we're looking for here, that space away from the day job, the space away from the silo. So just to summarize then, three ideas for action today. Number one, channel your inner anthropologist. If nothing else, it's quite fun. Number two, build some bridges, starting with maybe adjacent functions could be quite useful. And then Sarah and I shared a few other ideas that work for us there. And number three, get some space away from your silo. We will summarize all of that and also some of the links that we talked about and books. We'll put all of that in the pod sheet and you can find that on the links to the show notes or just go to amazingif.com and then the podcast page and you'll be able to find this episode there.
Thank you so much for listening. That's all for this week. We'll be back again soon. Bye for now.
Bye everyone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.